All right, so the season finale of the great stories from the Nevi'im, and as the finale is supposed to, weaves together many aspects, many elements of the other inyanim, the other events that we study this year. So tonight we'll look at David and Goliath, David and Goliath. Clearly one of the most famous stories, most famous metaphors in all of literature, any type of literature, and on a simple level it's become a metaphor for the triumph of the weak over the mighty, of the underdog over the favorite, like the 69 Mets over the Orioles, that type thing. Or other wars, anytime there's a victory, an unexpected victory, so it's David over Goliath. Naturally, that understanding is not only superficial and simplistic, it's also foolish, because that's not the essential theme of the story. There's a completely different struggle that's going on here, that's being waged, and that's what we'll try to understand. Who is Goliath? Where did he come from? How did he threaten Israel? I mean, one person is going to threaten an entire nation? There's no one person, no matter how powerful, that can threaten an entire nation. What was the fear that Klal Yisrael had? And what exactly was the triumph? Indeed, what did it do for David HaMelech's career? So, let's look first at number one. The story is contained in Perek Yud Zayin of Shmuel Aleph. It's the entire Perek. Long Perek, it's the entire Perek. Vayasvu Plishtim es machaneihem l'milchamo. The Plishtim gathered their camps for war. Vayasvu socho asher liyudo. Vayachanu bein socho bein azeko b'efes damim. So they gathered between socho and azeko. This entire event, as we know, takes place between what is today Beit Shemesh and Ashkelon. Why is it they came to battle? It's so strange, because the last time we met, which was a while ago, but the last time we met, Shaul had just defeated the Plishtim, and they were weakened. So all of a sudden they again come. Well, you'll remember that Shaul had already been stripped of his melucha by Shmuel after the debacle with Amalek, and he fell into a depression. And the person who was lifting him out of the depression on a daily basis, as the Pasuk says right before, was David. David had come into Shaul's palace, and when Shaul was depressed, v'lokach David esakinor v'nigein biyado, he would take his harp and play music for Shaul, v'ravach l'Shaul, v'tovlo, v'sara me'olav ruach ha'ra'ah. Then the melancholy would depart from Shaul. But it had an effect, because in any society where the leader is dysfunctional, depressed, it seeps into the people. And there's no doubt, the Malbim says, the same thing happened here. With the depression of the king, the people themselves felt weak and vulnerable and despondent, and the Plishtim, even though they had just been defeated, capitalized on this spirit of weakness and decided to mobilize their forces for war. Now, we know already that David is known to Shaul. He's living in the palace and helping him on a daily basis. But this becomes the vehicle through which David makes his national reputation, and he's elevated to the melucha. Keep in mind again that David had already been anointed by Shmuel as the king, but it was not announced to the people. The only ones who knew about it was Shmuel Anovi and David's family. No one else knew about it, and it was kept secret. So what happened? So Shaul and Ish Yisrael, the entire army, came. They encamped in Emek Ha'ilah. I just drove through there last week on the way to Gaza. And then they prepared for war by Arhumil Chamolik Ras Plishtim. They arrayed themselves for war against the Plishtim. The Plishtim were on one side of the mountain, on one mountain rather. Yisrael on the other mountain. Vagai Beinehem. There was a valley between them. And then the ante is up. Vayetzei Isha Beinayim Imachanos Plishtim. Goliath Shemo Migas. Goliath Migas. A man came out, a champion, Isha Beinayim. Isha Beinayim, a champion, a man of the middle, meaning he came down into the valley every day between the two mountains in order to taunt Klal Yisrael. Isha Beinayim also means something else, which we'll discuss in a moment. But he came down, listen to the description. Gavho Shesh Amos Vazores. He was 6 cubits and a span. So an Amos is a little less than 2 feet. So Goliath is close to 13 feet in height. V'chova nechoshes al rosho. He's wearing he has a copper helmet. V'shiryon kaskasim ulavosh. And he has an armor of mail. U'mishkal ha-shiryon chameshes alafim shkalim nechoshes. And the weight of the armor was 5,000 copper shekels. Goliath is a more threatening and larger Shaquille O'Neal. That's what it is. He's a very imposing, dominant, physical personality against whom no one could match up. There's something else here as well. Ish HaBeinayim, so again, literally it means the man who is between, in the middle between the two camps, or it means the champion. Chazal darshan it differently. Look at number 3, the Gemara Sota Daf Membeis Amid Beis. My Beinayim, what does it mean, Beinayim, in between? It's a play on words. Gemara has a number of opinions. Amar Rav Shemivuna Mikol Mum. He was a perfect physical specimen, completely free of any blemish, any physical weakness. Ushmuel Amar, Shmuel said, Beinonisha Be'achov. He was the middle child. Middle child syndrome, meaning the one who's always looking to gain an identity for himself, to stand out, because he's surrounded by his older siblings and his younger siblings. So he felt the need, this also plays into his psyche, he felt the need to express himself, to do things which were a little different in order to attract attention. Debei Rabbi Sheila Amar Shuasui Kibinyan. Reb Shela's yeshiva taught Beinayim means he was built like a building. Like a building. Couldn't be moved. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Rabbi Yochanan said, Bar Meo Pape Vechara Ganoni. He was the child of 100 fathers and 1 mother. So Rashi says in 4, Ben Hatarovas. He was from a mixture. Shabo Harban Hashim Alimo Belaila Chas. Many men had relations with his mother in one night. Vinis Abra Min Echod. And she only conceived, of course, from one of them. Nimtso Echod Aviv Ekula Min Afim. So it comes out he has, of course, one father. But his mother had many liaisons, many adulterers. So in fact, Chazal is telling us something even more. The Goliath was the product of a promiscuous relationship in a promiscuous society. Who was his mother? So it gets even more interesting. Look at number 6. Again, the Gemara Sota Daf Mem Beis Amud Beis. Batishak Ar Palacha Mosov Ruzdov Kabo. So Shavuos is 17 days away. Arpa kisses her mother-in-law. And Rus cleaves to her. Arpa and Rus are sisters, the daughters of Eglon, or the grandchildren of Eglon, Melech Moav. They marry Machlon and Chilion. Rus deigns to stay with Naomi and convert. Arpa says she'll stay. In fact, she walks 40 steps with Naomi along the way. Naomi persists that Arpa not stay, and Arpa leaves. So she kisses her mother-in-law goodbye. Omer b'yitzchok, Omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yavo b'nei ha-neshukov, yiplu b'yad b'nei ha-dvukov. Let the children of the ones who kissed come and fall into the hands of those who cleaved. Dorash Rovo. Bischar Arpa demol sheharido Arpa al-chamoso. As a reward for the 4 tears that Arpa shed when she left her mother-in-law, Zochso v'yatsu mimena arba giborim, she was zocha to be the ancestress, according to some, literally, the mother of 4 great warriors, one of the great warriors, Goliath. So Goliath is the child of Arpah, even as David is the great-grandson of Rus. So now we have a very interesting dynamic. He could be very old, or it could most likely it's not a son, but maybe also a grandson or a great grandson of Arpah. Clearly, Goliath is older than David, because on the battlefield he mocks him for being so young. So he could clearly be at least a generation, maybe two generations older. But you see, in any event, that Arpah is the ancestress of Goliath. Again, even as Rus is the ancestress of David. What else do we see? So it's repeated again in Pasuk Chav Gimel, which you'll find number 11. V'hu medaber imam. So we'll get back to it, get back to the context a little later. But Goliath starts taunting the Jews on the battlefield. V'hu medaber imam v'nei ish ha-beinayim oleg Goliath ha-plishti shmo migas. He again is talking to them. Who is it? The ish ha-beinayim, Goliath the plishti from Gaz. And then the Pasuk says, Mima'archos plishtim, from the battalions of the plishtim. But the ksiv, it's actually written not Mima'archos, but Mima'aros. Mima'aros, without the chav. So the Gemara says, Rashi darshens it in 12. Rabboseinu darshu, Me'o b'nei Adam, He'eru ba'arpa imo, Kishepersho me'acherei rus, V'no'mi chamosa. 100 men had relations with Arpah when she separated herself from Rus and from Naomi, her mother-in-law. It says Imo, correct. Sometimes Imo is used also as a reference to a grandparent, but it could be, I'm not discounting that it's possible that she was his mother also. Of course, you know, we look at Arpah in Megillus Rus as down the level of Rus. But she's not a prostitute. I mean, she decided to say, no thank you. In fact, Naomi was the one who talked her into leaving. And yet, how does she fall to such a high level? One moment she says she'll convert, and the next minute she is promiscuous. So, in fact, Arpah herself was promiscuous, but the Plishtim generally were that they raised promiscuity to an ideal. Where do we see this? Rashi in Noach, and number 7. Rashi says in Bereishis, Perek Yud Dalet, V'yas pasrosim, v'yas kasluchim, asher yatzu mishom plishtim. The pasrosim and the kasluchim, they were the ancestors of the plishtim. How could that be? Rashi says, Mishneim yatzu. The plishtim as a nation came out of these two groups. Shehayu pasrosim v'kasluchim machlifin mishkav neshosein elu le'elu v'yatsu mehem plishtim. The pasrosim and the kasluchim, they were swapping wives. So the plishtim descended from this type of immoral environment. And as a result, when Arpah left the environment of Rus and Naomi, she fell naturally back into the environment from which she came. Question is, of course, how is it she could be so immoral? I mean, this is Arpah. She was on a high level, enough to at least entertain the possibility of conversion. So one pshat, the Gemara takes on a pshat that she lived with many men. The Chasam Sofer quotes the Tosefta in number 9 that it was only one man whom we encountered earlier this year as well. So look at the Mishpat Zov in number 9. V'hinei amru b'medrash shnei giborim amdu be'olam echad miYisrael v'echad mimos olam. Two giborim in the world, two great powerful warriors. Shimshon miYisrael v'Goliath mimos olam. Shimshon, the Jew, Goliath haPlishti. V'hinei inyan pele nimtza b'taras Moshe l'Chasam Sofer. Chasam Sofer writes this amazing thing.
Yotza mimena ikar akadusha shekolata.
when Arpa left the company of her mother-in-law, any kedusha that she had absorbed up to that point simply oozed out of her. But who did she seek to associate with? V'nivalo l'shimsho m'veisa surim v'yoldas golias. This was the first story we started with this year. She went, when Shimshon was imprisoned in Gat, she went, and the Gemara says that many women went in order to conceive with Shimshon. Arpa was one of them. She went to conceive with Shimshon. And now we see, according to this Tosefta that the Chasam Sofer quotes, Goliath was a product of Shimshon and Arpa. All right? What's that? Now you see where his Gibor. His Gibor came, his Gvur came through Shimshon. That's Tosefta. You have to understand. What's that? That's right. That's correct. Now say it again. Now we have Palestine instead of Philistine. Same thing. Yeah, I think what it means is that when Shimshon really betrayed his mission, so he sowed the seeds of the destruction of this confrontation between the Plishtim again and Klal Yisrael. He may have destroyed the Plishtim of his time, but the Chil Hashem that he created was one that would produce in later generations a Goliath who could be Mechal Hashem, Mecharif Umagadev, in such a way that the entire camp of Israel just fled in horror. After they blinded him, correct. Let's read on. V'hinei b'medrash amar b'yitzha kolosa ha'layla shep persha arpa mechamo. So the entire night, the night after she separated from her mother-in-law, nis'arvuba arlos goyim shalmeh b'nei adam. So the other pshat, the simple pshat, the Gemara, the medrash. She lived with 100 different men. All right. And the Tanchuma says, even a dog, all right? You don't like that. Even a dog. So the question is, why is this all necessary? I see author's discontent. Why is this all necessary to say? What is the proof? Vilichoros, he continues, Harekodem Haisa Orpa Mim Madregogido Losha Ratzonis Gayer. One moment she's on a level where she sincerely desires to convert to Yadus. She didn't want to have any, she wanted to sacrifice basically. So she listened to Naomi's entreaties and returned to her home. How is it possible that she falls in such an astonishing way? How is that possible to fall to these depths of impurity? She should give birth to Golias, who's Mecharif Marchos Hashem Tzvakos. So he says first, Dover Zemilamed es hayesod sheshonu perash kosher mikulon. The worst of all individuals, the most unlikely candidate for Kiruv, as a matter of fact, is someone who learned in yeshiva and then departed. Someone never learned anything, they're more open to it, because they don't know, so you can bring them back. But someone who's learned, it's much more difficult, because they think they know it all, and they've rejected it. And so that was the level that Arpa was on. Here she lived with Naomi and Rus. She absorbed from them what the Torah was, the ethic of Torah. Once she departed from that, then lo zocha nasa lo sama moves. The person is not zocha to the Torah being a sam chaim, becomes a sam moves. Sheim lo olim osvada yardim. If you don't ascend, so certainly then you're going to descend, and very, very quickly. And in fact, it's not uncommon that anybody who leaves something develops a hatred for what was left behind, especially if what was left behind was something that others admired, but they themselves did not want. The one who aspires to great heights and doesn't attain it will fall to great depths. And in fact, that is what happened to Arpa. V'ra'isi b'sefer Knesses Chayim sheliyad atzadik over hashefa u'mushpa l'mishenimtza mechitaso v'kirvaso. that those who live adjacent to the tzaddik, they benefit from his influence. Even though they're not on the same level, oyle tzaddik, oyle shcheina, like we say, oyle rosha, oyle shcheina. I'm sorry, tov le tzaddik, tov le shcheina. Good for the tzaddik, good for the shachain. To be neighbor of a tzaddik is an advantage. But oyle rosha, oyle shcheina. To be the neighbor of a rosha, so you imbibe his bad example. As long as Arpa was together with Rusanami on a high level, so from their power, their strength, their merit, so she gained. But the moment the connection was severed, she went down to her natural level. The Milos, the Koach, the Zchus was no longer there. So in fact, that's what happened to Naomi. When she was on a level of Kedusha, she aspired to it. She couldn't maintain it, and what happens? She winds up basically in the Shukshal Zonas, which again is not uncommon. I mean, it's one of the unfortunate things that we represent Mamlachas Kohen of a Goy Kadosh, and yet much of the immorality in society unfortunately comes through Jews. That accusation of our enemies is unfortunately true. Most of the industry is a Jewish industry. So therefore, you see, we represent the Kedusha. We're people of extremes. In fact, that's what the Torah says. We could be Kochavim, right? Or Afar Ha'aretz. When we're worthy, we can't be touched because we're like the stars. When we're unworthy, we're like the dust. And it's true on a moral level as well. We could reach sublime heights, or we reach depraved depths, and there's really not much middle ground. We live in the extremes. Other peoples are not really like that. Other peoples can more or less exist within a certain realm, within much more narrower parameters. We have wider parameters of existence, and you see it in the life of Arpa. Finally, one other point about this, that there's no doubt that if his mother, Arpa, if he descended from a family of a promiscuity, so a child from such a family is usually dysfunctional. Usually dysfunctional. And you see, Golias became just a person who wanted to kill people. That was his career. Reference one point. It's interesting that Saddam Hussein has four brothers, all from different fathers. So his mother lived with five different men. You see, that type of personality, a distorted, depraved personality, is a result of upbringings, or at least it is facilitated by an upbringing which itself lacks any moral basis. Golias really had that same type of upbringing as well, never knowing who his father was, and with a mother who was known, unfortunately, to the rest of the society. What else was he known for, Golias? So we see in the Psukim number one, glorification of the physical. So we said he was about 13 feet high. He's a very powerful physical specimen. So why is that mentioned? Because to Golias, that was the essence of his personality. Moreover, that was the essence of mankind. To be well-built, to be strong, to be able to defeat other people in combat, mano a mano, that represents the ideal human personality. That, of course, is also a corruption of our philosophy. What did all this induce in Golias? Tremendous arrogance. So let's look at Pasuk Hey. I'm sorry, Pasuk Ches. Vayamos, he stood between the camps. Vayamod vayikro marchos Yisrael. He cried out. By the way, the Navi, I didn't copy all of it, but the Navi lists all his weaponry. A copper shield, a copper neck guard, a very powerfully made spear, which weighed 600 iron shekels. He had a shield bearer walk before him. And then vayamod vayikro marchos Yisrael. Vayamolam, he called out to the battalions of Israel. Loma seitzu l'aroch milchama. Why are you going forth to wage war? Halo anochi ha'plishti. I am the Philistine. V'atem avodim l'shaul. your servants to show. Bruluchem ish v'yered Eloi. Choose one man, and he'll come down to me and fight. What does it mean, Anochi ha-plishti? They're all plishtim. He's the plishti. Of course, he's the man of ego. Look at Rashi in 10. Halo Anochi ha-plishti, eini lo sar meo v'lo sar elef. I'm not the officer over 100 or over 1,000. Ela plishti ke'echa min acherim. I'm a plishti, but unique amongst all the others. Even though I fought several wars with you, where have we met Goliath in the past? So think back to this year. Ani harakti Chofni uPinchas. I killed Chofni and Pinchas, the sons of Eli HaKohen. V'shavisi es Aron. I'm the one who captured the Aron, who retook the Aron from Goliath's hands. Think back. It was the winter. It was Shaul. Shaul was the one. The Nar from Binyamin ran and literally grabbed the iron out of Goliath and took it back. But he was the one. Vatem nasesem avodim l'Shaul v'lo shia eschem miyamav b'gvuraso. Your servants to Shaul, and what has he accomplished to you? To Goliath, to the man who's very mighty in terms of physique and abilities. So that gives rise not just only to the physical glamour, but the psychological glamour as well. Thinks he's superior. That notion, of course, that he who is strong or attractive or has unique physical quality is to be lauded over other people, that's a classic non-Jewish value. Look at number two. Yes. The Medrash Vayikra Parsha Umo Solom Mishoshein Ochlin Mishosin Hein Misaskim Adivrei Tiflus. When the nations of the world are involved in eating and drinking, so they get involved in nonsense. Omrim, who they'll say, Mi Chochom Ke Bilam, who is wise like Bilam? Mi Gibor Ke Goliath, who is as strong as Goliath? Mi Oshir Ke Haman, who is wealthy like Haman? It's interesting that these are three people all killed by Jews, yet they glory, they extol them for these virtues. Then the Jews come and say, Achitofel lo haya chacham, Shimshon lo haya gibor, Korach lo haya ashir. Achitofel was a great chacham, and Shimshon was a great gibor, and Korach was a great ashir. So what does it mean they weren't? It means these are not values to us. The value is who's the Eved Hashem, that's the value. Not wisdom per se, not wealth per se, not strength per se. Whatever capabilities one has, if they use for service of God, then it has meaning. If it's not used for Avodas Hashem, then it has no meaning at all. But we see we have a history of Goliath, which really spans the entire year's worth of Shurim. So what offer did he make? Like Ethan said, a duel. Alright? So think about it. What, like the question was, what's the point? What does the duel really accomplish? Duels are very common, of course, historically. Right, we had the famous one right down the road here in Weehawken, Alexander Hamilton and Aaron Burr. It's only 200 years ago. I think it's 200 years ago next year, maybe this year. It's a little strange that people, I mean civilized people, drafters of the Constitution, would resolve a dispute at gunpoint. It's not that long ago in history. But Rav Ariel writes in Oz Melech that in fact that is a non-Jewish value. Better to die a heroic death than live an ignominious life. A heroic death is even better than life. Even life is not ignominious. You want to die a hero. That's not our value. Our value is to live. Life is more precious. So it's not surprising if we read on. He says, I'm the plishti. Avayamar plishti. Ani, I'm sorry, im yuchali lochem iti vikoni v'oyinu lochem lavadim. If you're able to defeat me, we'll be your slaves. V'mani yuchal lo v'kisiv. And if I defeat you and smite you, v'yisem lonu lavadim. V'avadatem alsonu, then you'll be our slaves. V'yomar plishti. The plishti said, Ani cherafti es marchos Yisrael Yom Hazeh. Today I've disgraced the battalions of Israel. Tenu li yish v'ni lochamo yochad. Give me a man and We'll fight together and we'll resolve the entire dispute. Vayishma Shaul v'chol Yisrael as derei plishtim eila. They heard, Shaul heard, Israel heard what he had to say. Vayichatu vayiru me'od. And they were terrified. They're greatly afraid, and nobody stepped forward. Why did no one step forward? Granted, they're afraid. But what's in it for the Jew? Why would you want to be in a situation whereby you have to take on the most powerful person? The whole concept of the duel doesn't make sense. Rabbi Yitzchak Arama, the Balak Eidat Yitzchak, writes that it's not even a real duel, because a real duel, as was common in Spain and elsewhere, there were rules regarding weapons, regarding tactics, there was a referee. Here there's nothing. It's one person challenging another person. So why have it all together? What does it accomplish? Why settle the war this way? Turn the page for a moment. Look at number 18. Again, in the Mishpat Zov, quotes Rabbi Yonasan Ivashitz in the Yaris Dvash, who really asked this question. He says, what was the great strength of Goliath that everybody was afraid? So he says, V'zel Hashem, V'yesh lovin inan Goliath, and why he said, choose a person, and the defeated will be servants. Ma tam yesh lozeh? Because one warrior defeats another warrior, then the entire war is finished. Where does that come from? If one army defeats the other, then that's a victory. One person defeats another person. Why would you set up as a one-on-one? And if it should happen, Rabbi Yonasan Ivashitz wrote, that one of the combatants slips, or his sword falls out of its sheath, as happens in battle, so the second person is declared the victor, and then the whole other nation has to be servants to the first. Why would that be? So in the second paragraph, he says, at the core of this fight, Ki Rosh Mazalo Yakumlo. Goliath lived in the world of Mazel. Mazel is a particular value system that exists in society, that everything that happens is through nature, or through fate, or through chance. But really, we can't influence events at all. We're just living the destinies that were decreed for us. Goliath lived in a value system which was completely focused on instinctual gratification, on the taivas aguf, on the fulfillment of the yetzer hara. So when he said, "Bru lochem ish v'lochem imi," choose a man to fight, it wasn't the individual battle that he was fighting, but because he knew that Klal Yisrael represented a different force of Ein Mazel Yisrael. So he wanted to elevate the battle from a simple one-on-one battle of combatants to a battle of ideologies. And he said, "A lovely lochemi moleros mazal miatzliach." Let's see whose value system prevails. That was his taina. Ki minatzayach yiresh gam al Yisrael shalet hamazel. If he's able to be successful, it would mean that the only force in the world is the natural force, the political forces. But there's no other force, to wit, Noa Kadosh Baruch Hu, who guides and manipulates and forces events. It's rather all nature. V'lo kafi shomer Yisrael shem l'mala min ha-mazal. It's not like the Jewish people said, that we're not subject to that mazel. We're on a different plane of existence. So if he wins, then the value system of Klal Yisrael is defeated. Whereas if Klal Yisrael wins, Raya Shi Yisrael him l'mala min ha-mazel, and then he would have to himself concede. Goliath fought for his value system against our value system, which emphasizes service of God. The Gvura Hashem, Bechira Chofshis, the free choice of human beings in this world. Look at number 8, which is from Oz Melech. Milchemet Beinayim Milchemet Giborim Al Kavod Val Tilo. He said, a duel is a war of warriors for glory, for praise. Zof Yanit L'Plishtim. This is characteristic of the Plishtim. Hayom kimi tarbut haolam ha'agiyeh, who they're nurtured from the culture, the egoistic culture of the world. Shebon ne'ratzim ha'koch, their power, might is glorified. Uva mot giborim chashum ha'chayim, that's what I quoted before. And therein, the death of the hero is more important than the life of anyone else. And you know, in American society, it's no different, really, that we glorify a hero and not so much the one who lived to contribute afterwards. Tfisa zo zoro, l'Yisrael l'chalotin, is absolutely foreign, this concept, to the Jewish people. L'chein ein l'palei al heder kol motivatio yishit b'kerev ha'om l'chein b'golias. There's no reason to be to wonder at the absence of motivation on the part of any Jew to come forward. Why? Dvar nishmeim zarim, bilti muvanim, einam marim kol heid. What Goyas is saying is really foreign to Jewish ears. This type of struggle, this type of personal confrontation. I mean, there was a time that Jews were boxers even. Now, I mean, the last, as far as I can remember, the last 30, 40 years, every door has one Jewish boxer. And that's the anomaly. Because when we were an immigrant society, it was a way to get ahead. But now we moved on to other pursuits. The Jews are the doctors and the lawyers for the boxers. But every now and then you'll see the fighting Jew. Why it's so unique? Because it's one bedar. One bedar, that's it. And now it's even more. Actually, there's an Orthodox Jew now who's a boxer, a Russian immigrant to America. In Israel, right, but that's years ago. So that's one a generation. Vulam inyan ishi ein kan, if there's no personal struggle with Golias, etgar lumi yesh v'yesh, there is a national confrontation. That's what it is. And that was the recognition that here we're talking not the personal fight of Golias and another individual, but we're talking of a fight of nations, a fight of ideologies, and that's how it was perceived. And indeed, they had no way to respond to that because Shaul was despondent. His army didn't know what to say or what to do. Let's look at number 11. V'David ben ish efrati azeh, I'm sorry, hayo, I'm sorry, if ish efrati azeh mibes lechem yudah, shmo yishai. So David is again introduced to us from Ephrat, son of Yishai, eight sons. His father was very respected, Yishai. The three sons of Yishai had gone out to battle already with Shaul, and Yishai sends David to the battlefield to take supplies, a little grain, and see exactly how they're doing. So David arrives on the battlefield at the moment when Goliath again, it happened over 40 days, is challenging the Jewish people. And he sees, Pasuk Chav Gimel, V'hu medaber imam, V'hinei isha b'aynayim oleh Goliath ha-plishti shmo migas, Merchos plishtim ha-yidaber kadvom ha-elo v'yishma David. He hears, and he sees something else. V'chol ish yisir b'rosam eso ish, every Jew, when they saw this man, Golias, vayanusu mipanav, they fled from him. Vayerumo, they were very, very frightened. Vayomer Yisrael, harisem, ha'ish ha'olah hazeh, did you see this man who goes forth? Ki l'charef es Yisrael oleh, he's disgracing Israel. And now they made a promise which came from Shaul. Ha'ish asher yakenu, the one who's able to defeat Golias, Yashrenu Hamelech Osher Gadol, the king will make him very wealthy. Vesbito Yitenlo, get a daughter as well. Became Michal, Bashal, married David. Vesbeis Aviv Yaseh Chavshi B'Yisrael. And this family will then be free from any type of royal service. So David is looking, and he says to the people in Pasuk Chavav, Vayomer David El Anashim Omdim Yino Limor, what's going to happen? What did you say? Ask for it to be repeated, so it'll be accepted. And then he says, "Ki mi'a plishti he'orel hazeh ki cheref marchos Elohim chayim." Who is this uncircumcised plishti who has disgraced the battalions of the living God? and they said to David, such and such will happen to this person, and therefore he will gain the rewards of the king. David is a little astonished that nobody says anything. Nobody does anything. There's one pasuk tezayin, one pasuk we skipped. Vayigash haplishti hashkem v'harev v'yisyatsev arbim yom. The plishti would approach the camp very early in the morning and then at night, and he stood there, presented himself for 40 days. Chazal say, by the way, the 40 steps that Arpa took with Rusin Ami, whose reward that Goliath was able to taunt for 40 days. What else did he do? So let's look at number 13. Again in Sota, Membez Amidbez, V'igash ha-plishti ha-shkem v'arev, Omer Rabbi Yochanan, why did he come? Boker v'arev, Kidei levatlon mikriyashma shel shachris v'arvis, in order to deprive the Jews of saying Shema in the morning and the night. V'yisyatzev arbim yom, he stood there for 40 days, Omer Rabbi Yochanan, Kineged arbim yom shenitno behen Torah, in corresponding to the 40 days during which the Torah was given. What's the point? What are Chazal saying here? So Goliath was doing two things. First, every day he was blaspheming HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Rachmanu Litzlan. So what does it mean he's mevatel Kriya Shema? He's mevatel Talmud Torah? It means that Goliath also knew it wasn't personal. And it wasn't just a war simply of ideologies in the Luft, philosophies, but it was a war against God and against Torah. Goliath was trying to eliminate Klal Yisrael as representatives of HaKadosh Baruch. Turn the page for a moment and look at number 19. Again in the Mishpat Zazov, we see from Divrei Chazal, Rishom always sense, always know the weak point, the secret of our strength. And they do things in order to deprive us of the ability to study Torah, to do mitzvos. All our enemies were like that. Therefore, to defeat us. The Nazis in Machshmom did that. Haman or Russia did that. The Christians in medieval times did that. All the religious persecutions that existed, the edicts from the time of Tanakh through the wars with Rome in the Persian, the Zoroastrian era, they're all attacks on the Torah, because they know as the Torah is the entity which gives us strength. If they're able to weaken our attachment to the Torah, then we'll fall naturally. As Haman Arasha said, Yeshno Amechad, there's an Amechad, Mefuzah, Meforad, Ben Agoyim. So Chazal Darshan, Yeshno, Yashnu Min HaMitzvos. They're sleeping, they're not doing mitzvos, and therefore it's an opportune moment to attack them. That's what the nations of the world, that's what our enemies recognize. And that's what Goliath recognized as well. So in addition to being arrogant and perceiving the world simply as a world of the physical, where the physical is dominant, and seeing it as a personal attack on Jews, and even as a war of ideologies, Goliath saw it as a war against the Torah as well. Into this breach steps David HaMelech. David, who will soon to be Melech. David comes from a different perspective. The perspective of David, of course, is Lamala Min HaTeva. He doesn't represent the world of the physical. David represents the world where the physical is simply a tool that HaKadosh Baruch Hu uses. So David utilizes the Teva, but he utilizes only in such a way that the Ashgocha Pratis, God's special providence, will be apparent to everyone. What is David HaMelech's motivation? So turn back to the first page, number 14, the bottom left. The Yalkut Shemoni in Tehillim. It's Tehillim Lamed Vav. The Pasuk says, Num Pesha L'Rosha B'Kerev Libi, Ein Pachad El Kim L'Negan Inov. Within me, David says, the sin of the words which express the sin of the Rasha is that he has no fear of God. David looked at Goliath and he saw he was a warrior armed to the teeth with all types of weaponry. Omar, who's going to be able to defeat him? When he saw that Goliath was disgracing and blaspheming, he said, "Ani yacholo." Why? Me'acha shein yivcha me'kadosh baruch hu. He has no fear of God. If he has no fear of God, then he's going to be capable of defeat. Mikan atolomed shein kadosh baruch hu donas harashoim ela bizman shein pachado aleihem. God judges the wicked when they lose his fear. They lose the fear of God. They think they're invincible. And then they start making mistakes. They're ripe for disaster. So the Novi goes on to say, if you turn to 15, David presents himself to Shaul, and Shaul is wary, skeptical of sending David in. And David says, "No, I was a shepherd for my father, Uvo Ha'ariv Esadov, a lion and a bear came to attack the sheep, and I went and I killed the lion and the bear." There's actually several of each. And then he says, "This uncircumcised Plishti, he's going to be exactly like the lion and the bear that I killed. Ki cheref marchos Elohim chayim. Because he disgraced the battalions of the living God." By the way, why does he keep calling him the Orel? A Plishti Orel. They're all Arelim, only Goliaths. Because Arelus is also to us, bless you, a sign of immorality. Since we sanctify ourselves through the Milah, someone without a Milah is not necessarily so, but it's characterized a person who lives in an immoral life. And therefore, when he describes him as Heplishtia Arelazah, what he's saying is how does this lowlife deign to insult the Elohim Chayim? That can't be. Vayomer David, Hashem asher yitzilani miyad ha'arim miyad ha'dov, hu yatzilani miyad ha'plishti hazeh. God, who saved me from the lion and the bear, he'll save me from this plishti as well. Vayomer Shaul al David, lech v'ashem ye'imoch. Shaul said, "Go and God will be with you." David is mocked by Goliath, but because Goliath lives in the world of physical determinism. He's an Orel. An Orel means someone who's not into any type of perfection, any type of change to the physical. What's natural is what should be. We live on a higher level. It's Yom HaShmini, Imo Basar Laso. We live on a higher level where the physical can be consecrated, and therefore our battalions are represented by David. Shaul then gives David the armor. You look down in number 15. Shaul gives first his own armor to David, and he gives him a helmet, and he gives him his sword. And David says to Shaul, "Vayoel lolechas ki lo nisa." He was unwilling to go into battle with those armaments because he said he's not used to it. Vayomer David al Shaul, "Lo uchal lolechas ba'ele." I can't use these. Vayisireim David me'elov. He took them off. Why didn't he want to use them? So look at the Malbim 23 on the left. Vayomer David, "Hodi alo shema shelo lakachi melcher v'chidon." It's actually a later pasuk, but same point. The reason why he didn't take a sword or a spear or a shield, "Ki hu eino boteach al koach basar." He's not relying on the power of the flesh. "Valinyanim tiviim," on the natural order of battle. "Ke klei neshek shebiado shem Hashem asher cherev." David's weapon is God's name. "V'shem hazeh yinatzcheu b'derech neis." Through this shame, through this name, he'll win in a miraculous way. David rejects it. He then comes b'shem Hashem. He approaches Goliath. And let's see what happens. Because on one level, it's illogical when your enemy is armed and is wearing shields and has weapons for you to go into battle without that. So he didn't want to insult Shaul. Chazal say, really, it's out of anova, that he didn't want to show himself that he's going to be the beneficiary of an ace. But be that as it may, he told Shaul, something you understand, I'm not used to it. So therefore, let me go into battle this way. Vayelecha plishti halech v'karev el David. So the plishti then approaches David. Oh, I'm sorry. Pasuk before. Vayikach maklo biyado vayivchar lo chamishah chalukei avanim. David takes two things into battle. He takes a staff and he picks out five smooth stones from the brook. And he puts them in his knapsack and his shepherd's bag, and he takes also his kela, his slingshot. So why did he take the makel altogether? Took the makels, he should have something in his hand. So Chazal say that he wanted Goliath to think that that would be his weapon. So he wouldn't be expecting the stone, that he was going to attack him with the makel. The Goliath sees this, and notice he's just called Haplishti here. Vayelech Haplishti lech v'karev el David, Vishno se'atzin alafanov. The Plishti approaches, walks closer to David, and he has his shield bare before him. The Plishti looks and sees David and mocks him. Ki hayonar vadmonim yifei mareh. David is a lad. He has red skin, ruddy complexion. He's handsome. He looks like a model. All right? He's 28 years old at the time, by the way. So he's in the prime of his youth. Vayomar Plishti el David. Goliath says to David, "Hachelav anochi, am I a dog? Ki atovoy like bimaklos, that you come to me with a stick, with sticks." By the way, Chazal say that's why the accusation was lodged against Arpa, that she lived with a dog, because he said, "Hachelav anochi." Why would someone say that unless there's some accusation of bestiality? Vaykalela plishti as David belokov. So plishti cursed David using the Shem Hashem. The Plishti said, "Come here, and I'll give your flesh to the birds of the heavens and the animals of the field." All right? Animal of the field. Two things I want to point out. Look at Rashi, 16 first. David says to Shaul that God who saved me from the Ari and the Dove will save me from here. What is he saying? It's not for nothing that I'm here. David already senses destiny. But the only reason why I'm here is because I'm really destined to be here. And I know my future lies in vanquishing Shaul. Otherwise there'd be no reason why I'd be on the battlefield at this time. Similarly, there's another example. Two cases in Tanakh of tzaddikim who felt something is afoot. They couldn't put their finger on, but they knew great things were happening. One case is this, the other case is Mordechai. Mordechai hung around the palace. Amar, lo l'chinam also b'tzadek ezo shenit b'sa b'mishkaf ha'orel hazeh. Not for nothing is Esther forced to live again with this orel, Achashverosh. El shasido hi lama li yisro b'yom tzoro. There must be some greater divine purpose. Mordechai felt that. Prior to that, David felt there must be a divine purpose here. Now notice again what Shaul said. I'll give your basar la'of ha'shamayim ulevemas ha'sadeh. What? Goliath said. La'of ha'shamayim ulevemas ha'sadeh. To the birds of the heavens and the animals of the field. So Rashi says in 17, ein derech lebehemos lechol adam. A behema is a domesticated animal, not a wild animal. Domesticated animals don't eat human flesh. Omar David, he already is speaking irrationally. He's not using his mind. Shelihu, now he's mine. It's a beautiful insight that Chazal have. Goliath is operating from different premises. one in which, in fact, Chochmah plays no role. Brute force is going to win the day. And David sees that really Goliath is now his, because he's not using his mind anymore. He's completely overcome by his emotions. So at that point, he knows he has him. And in fact, to taunt him, David says, "Vayomer David al Plishti, atah boi lai b'cherev v'chanis v'chidon. You're coming with a sword and a spear and a javelin. V'anuchi boi lecha b'shem Hashem tzvakos, Elokei marchos Yisrael shecherafto. I'm coming just in the name of the God of hosts, whom you blasphemed. Hayom azeh yisagercha Hashem b'yadi. Today God will deliver you into my hand. V'kisicha v'asirosi Yisrael shecho me'alecha. And I will smite you, and I will remove your head from you, decapitate you. V'nosati peger machanei plishtim hayom azeh. And I will today offer the carcass of the entire camp of the Philistines, Lauf Hashemayim, will chayasores. A chaya eats carcasses, not a behemo. V'eidu kol aretz ki yesh Elokim liYisrael. And the whole world will know that there's a God in Israel. V'eidu kol hakohol hazeh, ki lo becher v'chanis yoshi Hashem. And this entire kohol will know that God doesn't save us with a sword or a spear. War is really for God. It's God's business, and He'll deliver you into our hands. The Kliyoker says, what's the two V'yedus? V'yedu kol aretz ki yesh Elokim Yisrael. V'yedu kol kol hazeh. So V'yedu kol ha'aretz ki yesh Elokim Yisrael is a reference to the nations of the world. Let the non-Jews know there's a God in Israel. But let the Jews know as well that we don't win with the cherev and the chanis. Kila shema milchama v'nasan eschem b'yadeinu. That's a lesson that Klal Yisrael has to learn in every generation. Even today, we win wars through the auspices of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's how wars are won, not any other way. So what does David do? He had taken these five stones. Look at 20, again, the Mishpat Zav quotes the Chazal in the Medrash Shmuel. Why five stones? Five stones because Goliath had essentially attacked five entities. He had five goals. Echa l'shmo shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he blasphemed, so he was going to avenge God's honor. Echa l'shmo shel Aaron, he did the Gol Hadam of Chofni and Pinchas, who were killed by Goliath, Ushlosha Lishlosha Ovo Saolam, and the other three for Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, because he wanted to destroy Klal Yisrael. Goliath is really defeated before he starts, because David saw he wasn't thinking clearly anymore. How does he die? V'ayo kikom, since Pasuk Memchas. The Plishti gets up and he starts moving closer to David, and David runs towards him. Vayishlach pasuk memtes. Vayishlach David es yado el akeli. David reaches into his sack. Vayikach misham even. He takes from there a stone. Vayikala and he slings it. Vayaches a Plishti el mitzcho. He hits the Plishti on his forehead, his temples, forehead. The stone stuck in his forehead, or his temple, and he fell on his face. Okay. How is it possible if he's wearing a helmet? So that's the one exposed part of the helmet, the temple, to allow a person to hear. So the temple area is going to be exposed. The archaeologists have a field day with this, doctors as well. I remember seeing in one of the archaeology magazines, maybe BR a couple of years ago, they're trying to diagnose, there's some disease, I forget what it's called, related to being a giant. I forget the name of it, but among the maladies is you lack peripheral vision. What's that? Oh, whatever it is. That's right, that's what it was. That's correct. Didn't have peripheral vision. So what David did is he ran to the side, and that's where he slung the stone, so Goliath couldn't see it coming. Of course, it was a great shot. It's it's a miracle, but it may not be a miracle. He could just be a great marksman. So I told a story once before that I heard. This was from our guide in Israel, David Magenta, said, they were in Emek Kailah, really revisiting the place of the battle of David and Goliath. And he was saying, he was with an IDF unit. And he was teaching them about these events. So he said to them that, yeah, David, it was a perfect shot. So whether it's a perfect shot, however it was done, a nace, he fell and died b'nace. So he said, Magenta did, that there was an Ethiopian soldier in the unit who said it's not a nace at all. Those who are adept at using a slingshot, they could do it. So he said, I'll give you an example. So he took a rope and a rock, and he attached the rock to the rope, and he said to Magenta at a distance, like 7,500 yards away, he said, pick a branch. So he said to him, you mean an ace, a tree? He said, no, pick a branch that you want me to hit. And before their eyes, this Ethiopian swung the rock 100 yards and hit the branch. So if you are a marksman, so it's not an ace. Of course, Ashkocha too. But that's what David did. He killed him, of course, in a way that it was least expected. Chazal, Bali Musar say, of course, what did he hit? The Metzach. What's the Metzach a symbol of? Arrogance. Al Chet Shechatan Lefanecho, Be'azus Metzach. Alright? So here, Goliath's haughtiness did him in, because he thought that David had no power. So he was hit in the Metzach. Was noch? Vayechazak David min ha-plishti ba-kela uva-heven. David overpowered the plishti. Not even named anymore. With his stone and with his slingshot, vayaches ha-plishti vayimiseus, apparently just knocked him unconscious. Then he killed him. V'cherev ein b'yad David. He didn't have a sword. So how'd he kill him? What? Goliath has a sword, right? David didn't have a sword. Vayaretz David vayamod el ha-plishti. He ran. He stood by the plishti. Vayikaches charbo. He took Goliath's sword. He stabbed him, he cut off his head. The plishtim saw that their hero was gone, and in fact they fled. What's the aftermath? It's interesting, I didn't cite all of it, but first Shaul then says to Avner, who is this? Who is this who killed Goliath? It's very strange, because Shaul knew David, gave him the equipment, and he was playing the harp for him already, even before this started. So what's the pshat? That now Shaul saw David in a different light. You know, before this he was a musician. A musician is a musician. He's not the killer of Goliath. He's not a warrior. He said, who is this person that we have? And Chazal say, Shaul already at this moment had an inkling that David was to be the one who would succeed him. David becomes a hero. Shaul sees he's perhaps a potential melech, a rival. Shaul's jealousy is now aroused, and David is going to be hounded by Shaul. Beyond the personal, David makes here a national statement that really reverberates through history. The event affects him in a very profound way. I mean, David refers to it even to Tehillim. Look at number 21. He prays to Hashem, Atzil micherev nafshi miyad kelev yichidasi. Save me from the sword, from the hand of the dog, the singular dog, the dog being Goliath. And of course, the people understood as well that David was now a different gavra. When we return and start again in the fall, when the chant rings out, he kush Shaul balafav v'David berivosav, that Shaul kills thousands, but David 10,000s, then there'll be no turning back. Look for a moment at 22, which is the Mishnah Maseches Sota, which really encapsulizes the entire episode, what David saw. Ki Hashem Elokeichem Aleich Imachem. God, this is the charge to Jews going into battle. God accompanies you. Who? We say it every Shabbos morning in the Tefillah itself. Hu Yilochem Lochem. Hein bo min etzchono shel basar v'dam, v'atem bo min etzchono shel makom. They go, they fight flesh and blood. We're fighting with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Plishtim bo min etzchono shel Goliath. The Plishtim came with the might of Goliath. Maya sofo, l'sof nofal b'cherev v'naflu amo. He fell to the sword, so did his people. V'atem mi atem kein, ki Hashem Elokeichem Aleichim Ochem L'Lochem Lochem, Zemachnei Ha'aroch. When the Aaron, when the Torah travels with us and girds our armed forces, then in fact we are fighting a different battle on a different battlefield, and the parameters of that battle completely different as well. Something else interesting happens here. Look at 15 Pasuk Nun Dalet. Vayikach David es rosh haplishti vayivyehu Yerushalayim veskelov sombolo. David takes the head of the plishti and brings to Yerushalayim. And he brings the Caleb, the sword of Goliath, he takes back to Beit Lechem. Where does Yerushalayim come into this? It wasn't simply, of course, a war of nations, but it was a war of values. And this war of values can be resolved only through by representatives. You did not really need the entire nation to fight. Look at 24. Again from Oz Melech. Bishnayim kidesh David shem shemayim. In two ways here, David was mekadesh Hashem. As the Kliyokar pointed out, v'yedu kol ha'aretz, all the non-Jews will know. V'yedu kol ha'kol hazeh, all the Jews will know. Davka reka zeh mekabelet melchemet ha'beinayim or chadash. It's only on this background that this duel acquires a new light. Amnam ein la makom achrat milchama lu mitrigila. We're really not talking about a normal war of nations. Achata zoy milchama arachit datid elokit. But in fact, it's a war of values, of religion. Zayna nimdedet benaro dam eladai b'nitzigim lochamim kadei lachriya. A war of values does not require a river of blood to determine who's the victor. It just requires representatives. The force of David, David ben Yishai, the great-grandson of Rus, Goliath, the descendant of Arpah, representing those two different streams that entered the political dynamic of the world. Something else happens here as well. See, Goliath is really emblematic of all the possible enemies that we've had in history. That makes such a fascinating figure. Goliath is a warrior, he's physically strong, daunting, indomitable, but he also attacks God, he attacks the Torah, he attacks the Kahuna, Chofni Pinchos, he attacks Malchus, he attacks Shaul. Every aspect of the life of the Jewish people is attacked by this enemy, Goliath. Something happens which is even more profound here, and that a change comes over David HaMelech. Back to 24, the last paragraph. Haruach HaGdola Mifahemet B'David, this spirit which is now beating within David, Hovilo Tobechol Darkaru Kol Binyan Malchut Yisro Beit HaMikdash. This is what transports David on his path, the long path, to building Malchus Yisrael and the Beit HaMikdash. So it's interesting then he says that he took the head to Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim doesn't exist yet. Yerushalayim won't exist for another 15 years when David buys it from Aravna Yavusi. So what does it mean, Yerushalayim? So Chazal say, in context, it's anachronistic. It means when he got to Yerushalayim, he brought Goliath's head there. But that's the simple context of Pshat. What the Novi's telling us is Yerushalayim, the same spirit which brought David to Goliath is what fired him the rest of his life. David is now forever animated and energized by his ability to harness physical power and produce a great Kiddush Hashem. And that's what it means that he brought Goliath to Yerushalayim, his head to Yerushalayim, to the Makom HaMikdash. And he brought the sword of Goliath to Beit Lechem. because this is the power that's going to fuel David in his drive for the monarchy, to fight the wars of Israel, and to build the Beis HaMikdash. This Ruach of David first manifested itself here in the confrontation with Goliath. When he takes the head to Yerushalayim, it means that's the ultimate goal, that the enemies of Israel should be completely vanquished. And what they represented, everything that's in their heads, everything that they conspired and deigned to do against Klal Yisrael, should be resting dead next to the Makom HaMikdash, the center of Jewish national and spiritual life. That's the symbolism of what David did. That's what David reflected in his generation. And that, of course, is our tefillah as well, that the enemies of Israel will lie vanquished in the very near future at the hands of the Melech HaMashiach next to the Makom HaMikdash in Yerushalayim, which should be rebuilt. We meet next. We'll discuss the wars of the conflict between Shaul and David and Shaul's final days. Okay.